Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, pretty baby, since you left me, I have been feeling oh so blue. I always thought that you would love me. I don't know what I should do. Do do.
Good day evening to each and every one of you. Thank you so much for joining me here this evening on another exciting episode of Healing Through Hurt Talk Radio. I am your host, Maria Wall. And as promised, tonight we have our returning guest, the gentleman of the Helping Up Mission out of Baltimore, Maryland. And before I bring the gentleman on, let me give you a little bit of a history of the Helping Up Mission. Since 1885, Helping Up Mission has been coming to the aid of Baltimore City's poor and homeless. During the last half of the 20th century, the mission narrowed its focus to servicing the spiritual and physical needs of the city's men who were poor and homeless. Yet, to really support these men in the 1990s, the mission began a long-term residential spiritual recovery program for men with drug and alcohol addiction. Today, their 12-month residential spiritual recovery program set in a 12-step therapeutic community is the centerpiece of Helping Up Mission's efforts, focusing on the intellectual, physical, social, and spiritual needs of every man that they serve. Their campus extends the entire 1,000 block of East Baltimore Street on the south side. Over the past decade, they have renovated over 95,000 square feet in three buildings, which now house their spiritual recovery program and the other services the Helping Up Mission offers. And with that said, it is my great pleasure to welcome Mr. Barry Burnett. He has been my gracious contact person at the Helping Up Mission, and it's a beautiful facility in downtown Baltimore. He gave me the grand tour, and my women's group, the WOW Women, or Women of Wisdom and Worth, we are planning on doing our volunteer services there as well in the near future. So with that said, I would like to welcome, we're going to start off with four gentlemen. Two of them, of course, last month when they won, they did not have a chance to speak. So we're going to be talking to them tonight, and that would be Mr. Barry Burnett and Mark Sikorsky. And we have two other gentlemen, Robert Provenzano and Patrick Hanning. He thought that he would be a backup person, but if I can get to everyone, I plan on doing that. So we're going to start off with these four gentlemen, and they're going to tell us a little bit about their stories and how they're healing through their hurt. So I want to welcome everyone. Welcome all of our guests in the call query. Thank you for joining us. And our guests in the chat room, welcome. If you have a question or comment in the chat room, feel free to type it, and I'll read it for you on air. And if you'd like, for all of our guests on the call query, of course, you may press the number 1 on your phone to let me know that you would like to be on air. But basically, this night belongs to the gentlemen, and so that we can give them as much time as possible in these 2 hours. We'd like for you to either email us or make your questions or comments short so that the gentlemen can get a chance to tell their stories this evening. So with that said, gentlemen, are you there?
Yes, hello, Maria. This is Barry. And thank you for having us on again. We look forward to this evening. And we had a wonderful time last talk show. And we're here to share on our behalf and hopefully enlighten some other individuals on our disease and what we do through recovery.
And that's wonderful. And I tell all of the listeners that so many times men are overlooked when we think about abuse or addictions or healing through hurt, especially because society says that men are not supposed to hurt and men are not supposed to need that help. They're supposed to be the rocks. But sometimes, you know, being human beings, we do find ourselves in a vulnerable position. And but for the grace of God, any of us could end up falling to the temptations of many types of addictions. So with that said, we're going to pick up where we left off at our last show. And again, if you'd like to hear the first show, it is archived in the Healing Through Hurt Talk Radio, those website on Blog Talk Radio. So feel free to listen to the first show and this show. So, Barry, I guess where do we want to start? You can tell us a little bit more about the programs, of course, and then we're going to jump right into how you became involved with this big picture.
Certainly, Maria. And, last time I really didn't get to speak on, you know, to tell my own story, and I look forward to doing that this evening. Now, in the way of what we do and some background on the mission, you pretty much nailed a lot of it right on the head, that we are a spiritual recovery program. This is a men's program. It's a 12-month, 12-step recovery program, and we have a number of graduates each and every year, somewhere in the number 100-plus, and we have a graduation ceremony every year, you know, to recognize those gentlemen and also to show the donors and supporters of the program. We invite them to the opportunity to attend the banquet, and it's a grand time. You know, we'll have 1,500 people. We just had our graduation ceremony this past April, and we had keynote speaker John Harbaugh, coach of the Ravens, who shared. And we had a video clip by Brian Roberts and his wife, Deanna, and it was a real wonderful time. And, of course, the highlight of the banquet is the men's choir, where we have about 40 guys who were collected, guys who are in the program, and some of them sang, some of them really haven't, and they have a matter of a few weeks to rehearse, and they put together this awesome sound that you wouldn't believe that comes out of the mouths of these men in recovery. And it's great, it really is. Now, in the way of the program, I guess what I can also pass on is, even though this is a men's recovery program, we are having our sights set on a women's recovery program, and we hope to have that well into gear within the next year. We are looking at different facilities to open that recovery program. We're getting our budget in line with the help of our supporters. And once we do that, like I said, hopefully within the next year or so, we will have a facility to accompany 100 and 125 women in recovery. And that'll be a marvelous step, a grand step that we're looking forward to accomplishing.
Wow, and that in itself, I am so looking forward to that, and really possibly getting with the women's aspect of it. You know, we love to volunteer our time and our services as well, but that's just a wonderful program, you know, because you didn't leave anyone out. You left no stone unturned, which is just a wonderful thing because, you know, so many times people feel as though they're being left out or singled out or whatever it is. And it's so wonderful that you all have decided to do this for the women as well. And you're pretty much an entire package, which is just a wonderful, wonderful thing. So that in itself is great. But one thing that I did want to ask you is that I know that a lot of times some of the gentlemen who start off in the program, then they actually stay on board as volunteers, a member of staff. So how does that come about? And I guess when you start to tell your story, you can kind of tie all this in together for all of our listeners.
Okay, yes, I'll try to do that. Well, as a man comes in, he enters as a seed of hope. And so for the first 45 days of his of being here, he is on restriction, and where he's not actually allowed to leave the facility, or the block, as you call it. And if he needs to, for a medical appointment, dental appointment, or social security appointment, he will be taken there under escort. But after the first 45 days, he phases into the second phase of the program, which is an alpha phase. And that phase is a 60-day period. At that point, they're allowed to leave the facility, sign out, mind you, about 3 o'clock, and have a curfew of 10. And so they're required to be back by 10. Now, also, during those hours that they're allowed out, they are required to attend 5 meetings a week. So outside meetings as an AA or NA or even a Bible study course where they're required to do that, have a sheet signed off so that even during their off time that they're required to concentrate on recovery. Then after that 60 days, they enter what they call an omega phase, and where they're still attending classes, they're getting deeper into the Bible, and hopefully they'll have a program set up of sorts where they're attending an AA or NA meeting. They'll have their sponsor. They'll be working on their 12 steps. We also require that they become involved in a church, a home church, and that they get a mentor and to help them walk their spiritual path. And when they finally have that all in line, they'll be entering what they call the life prep phase, which is about 5.5 months into the program. And when they start their life prep phase, and they're allowed to go out and look for work. Some of them might have jobs that were put on hold for 6 months, and some have lost jobs, so they'll be looking for new jobs. And we want them to become productive citizens in society. We want them to go ahead, move forward, you know, and start working, start, you know, supporting themselves and then supporting hopefully maybe their family that they've left behind. And then when they start doing that, they're required still to stay here as a resident. So this is a 12-month residential program. So during that full year, they still need to stay here. But should they go back to work, they would move in, say, to a transitional part of the facility where they'll have maybe one roommate or maybe 3 roommates and a little bit more privacy, a little more freedom of movement. They'll still be accountable. Well, they'll have to sign in and out and subject to any random testing, and because it is a zero-tolerance policy program. But during their stay here, everyone has a work therapy assignment, and that work therapy assignment might be someone who, you know, cleans the buildings. It might be what we call a peacekeeper. It might be someone who works in the kitchen. Everyone here in the program actually runs the program, so the program is pretty much run by the guys who are in the recovery. But during those work therapy assignments, some of the men might not really be looking for or looking for work on the outside. They want to concentrate on the recovery while here, but they may show also some supervisory skills in that particular work therapy assignment, so they may be asked to become an intern. Becoming an intern doesn't relieve them of any specific duties. They still have to attend the classes. They'll still have to make their appointments, but they'll be more accountable in their job and their job performance. But they'll also receive what we call a little cash stipend or allowance. And some of those gentlemen, as they move along and towards graduation, they might show the requirements to be hired on, should there be a position here in the facility, to hire them on as staff. And a number of the guys do stay here and get to be hired as staff members. We have a staff that consists of somewhere around 33 men and women at this facility. And about 22, 23 of those individuals are men who've actually gone through this program. And those are ones who, like myself, work in development. It might be in the program department. It might be transportation. But we all, you know, work here to run the program. And it helps us also to connect to the guys who are here in the program because we've gone through it. And so when somebody's hurting or suffering, we always have what we call the open door policy, where guys are more than welcome to step in, you know, and at times just speak to someone, you know, who they feel comfortable with, you know. And you know, not that we're in a position of authority, just that, you know, we've gone through the program. We've worked at 12 steps. We've had the program. And it seems that, you know, we have our recovery in line. And now there are those, you know, no matter how long they've been in recovery, that they fail, I guess, in a sense, and that they do relapse. And that's expected. For a lot of individuals, most individuals, it's not a first-time program for anyone, and it may not be a last-time program. But we hope when they get here, they get more tools that they can help in a long-term recovery basis. So hopefully that answers the part about people who, you know, start here just in recovery but end up staying as long-term staff members.
And I think that it's great that you, number one, what's the old adage, an idle mind is the devil's workshop. So you keep everyone busy, and it's the fact that you know, these men are being helped by people who have walked that mile or longer in their shoes. And that means all the difference in the world, because a lot of times people don't need to hear what someone who's never experienced what they've gone through or someone who's just a textbook junkie has to say. Not that I'm knocking therapists and things like that, because each person has their own particular place in the big grand picture. But a lot of times it's the person who they can relate to the best, because that person has actually experienced what they have experienced. So that in itself is a great plus, because, you know, once again, you're that all-inclusive package where you give these gentlemen exactly what they need, because they're not trying to make someone believe what they're saying. The person who they're probably talking to knows what they're saying because they've gone through it themselves. And I like that particular concept, because so many times when we go for help, it seems like it's a very cold place, you know. Okay, and once your hour or whatever is up, they throw you out. And it's like, you really don't care about me. It's all about, you know, you making your money, and then you're going to throw me out. And when my half an hour or hour of your session time is up, and, you know, sometimes it makes you feel like you've been dehumanized. So you give them that human aspect, and you let them know that they still have some type of worth, whether they believe it or not. You all give them that human factor back, which, you know, is very commendable in my book. So,
and you know, by giving their work therapy assignments, you know, it does help them to restructure their lives. You know, where before they might have just been running rampant on the streets and doing what they needed to do to get the next fixed or to get the next dollar or so, you know, to buy another bottle. But now, you know, they're in an environment where, right, we're all here hopefully working towards something, you know, and as you mentioned, you know, with the ones who are in the program who've succeeded, I guess, in a sense, and be able to be hired on as staff, you know, it's just not talking the talk. You know, we are walking the walk. And that goes also, we have the phase counselors, you know, who are in a position that these guys are needed to report to. But they're always the ones who lend an ear, you know, and many of them, you know, the three out of four of them have actually gone through this program. And so they have ones to talk to firsthand. And but you also mentioned about counselors, you know, and that's another thing. You know, the guys do have the opportunity to speak with licensed counselors and therapists, you know, once a week on an individual basis. And but they also have the opportunity to speak in a small group on, you know, once a week, and which, you know, which helps so tremendously. I know it has for me. And even now, you know, should I have some necessary, if I need a person to speak to, you know, my old counselor is still here, and he says, you know, at any time, just feel free to schedule an appointment or stop by, you know, because, you know, like I said, we all need someone to talk to. And for men, you know, we usually try to keep things bottled up, and that's another reason why we either used or drank, you know, to subdue all these feelings and emotions that we didn't want to face. And now we have the opportunity to just to open up and relieve ourselves of these thoughts and feelings, you know, where people actually listen and can help you direct on what to do with those feelings, you know, instead of just lashing out at the next person. You know, really think about what you're going to say and think what these feelings are being brought up about. And, yeah, it just helps really learn about yourself when you get to open up to someone who can, you know, help, you know, talk these feelings out. And but I guess, is there anything that I can talk to about before I head into my story, I guess?
No, actually, that was my next question, was that, okay, well, you know, you've given us that little synopsis of how the program works. And now, you know, my next question was, so tell us your story. How did you come to be at the mission from day one to the day that you're in now? So
I'd be more than happy to, actually. And I've had the opportunity to share my story on a number of times. You know, they have a newsletter here that has been put in print. And, you know, sharing in front of a congregation, sharing in front of a meeting, you know, it helps us to look at the past and learn, you know, at a point when to forgive ourselves, because we've already been forgiven, you know, and one of the hardest things for us to do is to forgive ourselves. But when we really start to share the story, I hope as people listen that, you know, if I can touch one person, you know, save one person or just give him some hope, but most of all, give him some hope, you know, that's more than I can ask to accomplish. So when there's an opportunity for me to share my story, I'm more than happy to. And it's not unlike a lot of people. I'm just a different person, different place. But, you know, how I got here, I guess, in a sense. You know, I'm not going to go into a long drunk log, they call it. And, you know, I will talk about my past, but I do want to talk about my time here. So, well, when I've come from a pretty stable family environment growing up. And we grew up in one of the neighborhoods that was all developed around the same time. All the parents were of the same age. They started having children all around the same time. And so we grew up with a neighborhood full of kids, and we got along. And even now, you know, we still associate with one another. And but we had, you know, pretty much a normal childhood. And, you know, I was into playing the football and the sports. Now, my father, he was an alcoholic. He wasn't the abusive type of alcoholic. He was just one who, because of his alcoholism, it required a lot of financial obligations to the state and a way of, you know, his licensing. And so financially it was a cost to the family. But we never really did without. He was always one to work. And, you know, I never you know, found fault in my father, and now that I understand the disease of alcoholism, I realize that he did the best he could. He just never learned, I guess, enough about his disease to overcome it, and it wasn't because of alcoholism directly, but at the age of 60, he had passed away, and it was due to cancer. But and that was another excuse I had used to really delve farther into my alcoholism. But so growing up was pretty much normal. And then when it came time for me to make a decision about going to college or staying around and working, I found that, you know, I really needed to go. And that was by joining the military. And so, you know, at the age of 18, I had left the house. Not left it for any particular reason other than I didn't think what I needed was there. But then in a sense, after a number of years, I ended up coming back anyway. Now, I started drinking about the young age of 13, and we had one of those, you know, parties, and we were able to get some beer, and that's when I realized what alcohol did for me, as in made me a little bolder, made me a little taller, maybe a little stronger, a little cockier, you know, and you know, it, of course, it maybe helped with the women's situation, and but you know, it just had this feeling that you know, this is maybe something I really need to do is, and so I started drinking at 13, and that pretty much continued all of my life. I did have a time where I was able to stop on my own for about 4.5 years. But I was what you would call the dry drunk. I didn't change anything other than I quit drinking and drugging, actually, at that same time. I had started using cocaine and smoking marijuana a few years after drinking, and that continued. Even during my years in the service, I was probably smoking more marijuana than one ever could realize. And so it was really off the hook. And you know, in the military at that time, I'm 50 years old, so the military at that time almost catered to drinking. We were allowed to drink during our lunch period, and they had beer machines, much like a soda machine in our dormitories. And so yeah, drinking was widely accepted in the military. I did my four, moved on, you know, always had the opportunity to work. I never lost a job because of drinking. I did go to jail for a few brief stints because of my alcoholism and drinking and DWIs. But, you know, again, never lost the job. I'm always maintained a half-decent paying job. And that continued for many, many years. But it was always drinking in the background that probably kept me from moving up higher in the workforce, you know, to that next step.
Right.
And but I was happy where I was. But then at that point, you know, it was I did quit. It was the year that the Ravens won the Super Bowl. I had turned 40 that same weekend, and that was the weekend I had to quit drinking for about 4.5 years. At that point, I got what would be a superb job. I was accepted with the federal government, working the TSA, the Transportation Security Administration. Worked at the Baltimore Washington International Airport, Thurgood Marshall, right here, and I moved right up the ranks, you know, from being a screener to being a supervisor, all within a short amount of time. The money was wonderful. The time off, retirement, had all that going for me. But then again, like I said, I was a dry drunk. And even though I was being the best I could, I was being the father, I was being the husband, you know, I was working the job, I was being responsible, I started making some decisions later on in that job that I shouldn't have. And it wasn't ones that would sacrifice the safety of the flying public, but his own personal decisions, and where I actually became unfaithful, you know. And in doing so, I started losing the one relationship with the wife and family, and then after a short period of time, the other relationships started falling apart. And, you know, once we start drinking, our emotions and stop growing. And so even though I was in my 40s, emotionally, I was still, you know, in my teens, early 20s. So when I had all these problems going on in my personal life, I really didn't know what to do with them. And, of course, I wasn't one to open up and seek help on a one-on-one basis or a personal basis. So I did what everyone would do, is fall back on an old solution that we know, you know, works every time, and I started drinking again. And when I started drinking again, I became less responsible. I still made it to work, sometimes not in the best shape, but what going to work and being in a fatigued feeling, I guess, I started to hang out in the old hangouts. And I remember some things in the way of drugs that helped people maintain, their alertness. So I started using cocaine again. And in a very brief amount of time, had someone turn me on to crack cocaine. And at the age of 44, started smoking crack cocaine. And almost, it seemed like immediately, I had started losing everything in my life. I mean, alcohol took away a lot of things, but, you know, I was always able to work and support a family. But once I started smoking that crack cocaine, the only thing I lived for was the next hit. They say you're chasing a demon, and exactly what it is. I ended up losing that government job, like I said, in a very short amount of time. I did quit using long enough to pass your analysis, be hired on by another company. But that actually lasted for about a year and a half. But again, you know, I was so caught up in my disease that everything I made, you know, was going towards that drug. I started blowing through my credit. I started blowing through my retirement. I went through thrift savings. I went through anything I could find to support my habit, to where I was financially, I was broke. And I, at that point, was living on my own. I stopped paying my rent. I stopped paying my bills. I stopped paying my car insurance, everything, where every cent I made was going towards, you know, my next hit. So it got to the point where, you know, I talked myself into moving in back in with then now my divorced wife. And that didn't last long. There was one stipulation. If I had moved back in, that she can't catch me drinking. And, of course, I wasn't supposed to be drinking. So, you know, in about 2 weeks of being there and living there, she had caught me drinking. Now, I failed to mention, after losing that second job, after a year and a half, I did serve another period of time in jail, and that's another because of a drinking and driving offense. And after being released from jail, I went to a year's program. It was another Alcoholics Anonymous program, and as a residential type setting, it was kind of like living in a large home with other alcoholics and addicts. And it was a year's program, but after being there for about 6 months, relapsing twice, after the second relapse, I knew that wasn't for me. you know, I already had my mind set up that I wasn't going to be there more than 6 months anyway. I went from working, you know, at the airport making $23-$24 an hour down to working for $12 an hour and working for minimum wage, and that's what will support me through this the other recovery program. But you know, it was at a point that that wasn't working for me. You know, I thought already I got this thing. So I, like I said, I talked myself into moving back into the house. After 2 weeks, I was kicked out. And this was also after a time when I was a few months homeless. After my cocaine and crack addiction, I was homeless for a brief period of time. And you know, after losing that second job, before entering jail, I was living in my car, you know, in the middle of winter. And after being, you know, in a place, you know, always had a roof over my head, had a pillow under my head, had food in my stomach, and then after being homeless and living in the midst of winter, you know, sleeping in my car, you know, under a pile of clothes, you know, where the inside of the windows get frosted up from your breath, and then you wake up in the morning, and you don't want to have to go outside the car because you know it's cold, and there's nowhere to go. You know, you leave your car, and the reason you leave, you know, is because you need to find a dollar. You know, you need to find a bathroom. You need to, you know, find a change of clothes. You need to find a next beer. You know, you need to find someplace warm. And, you know, I just wasn't cut out for that. So now fast forward again to being kicked out of my I guess, ex-house, I was facing homeless again, you know. I was going to be out on the street. And, you know, I wasn't ready for that. I did not want to be homeless outside, in the cold, in the wet. My brother had told me about this place, and I had learned about the other place where I went to first, but my brother actually told me about this place. He was my saving grace. And because I had never heard of this place, and when he told me about the Helping Up Mission, you know, the spirituality part of it, you know, I wasn't one who went to church read the Bible, you know. It was, you know, anytime I prayed, it was to help him, you know, to seek help in getting out of a certain situation. But after knowing I had nowhere to go, I had called my brother back up, and he had given me the phone number to this place, and that was on a Friday night. I mean, I'm sorry, it was a Sunday night, December 14th of 2008. I remember that I called down here, and I guess it was about 9 o'clock that evening, and they said, come in Monday morning. He says they got a bed for me. And so the next morning, I had my brother-in-law pick me up, drop me down here in Baltimore again, and I made my way to the mission, and that was December 15th of 2008, and that's when I started my long-term recovery program. Now, that was a Monday, and they don't phase you in until Friday. So I had 4 days where we were what they call an applicant, you know, of the program, where you're not a seed yet, you know. But, you know, you start going to these classes. And when I got here, well, you saw the facility now, but it wasn't quite like that. And, yeah, it was a more run-down facility, the main chapel. We slept when I got here. My first bed was on the balcony of the old chapel, but I was happy to be there, you know, because I had that roof over my head, I had that pillow under my head. I started to get 3 meals a day, but everyone here was, you know, so kind and. You know, and caring, you know. You know, some of them were hardcore, hard-nosed, but they wanted also to make sure that you wanted to be here because you had to make a personal commitment to go through with this thing. And there was a number of things that you had to give up. You had to give up drinking. You had to give up drugging. You know, you had to give up a lot of material things if we had them any longer. But like I said, I had pretty much lost everything by then. So, you know, it was a perfect fit for me. And coming in here, like I said, I had nowhere else to go. And where I had nowhere else to go, they took me in. And so, you know, I started my year program. And going through the program, I mean, you know, you're around so many different men, so many different personalities, but we're all here for one single reason, and that is to become better humans, better men, better brothers, better uncles and fathers. But we also want to become clean and sober. And so we're all working towards, you know, towards a certain goal, the same goals. And so when we get here, you know, we start talking to each other. And that, like I said, it's not something men normally do, is talk on a more personal basis. But you start just, you know, learning. You're learning about the men and why some of them are here. And, you know, people you probably wouldn't associate outside of here in your other life, you know. But once you start opening up and listening and talking, you know, we're all alike. And it's amazing that even though we do have our different stories, you know, we have the same problem, and that's drinking and drugging. And so when we get to, you know, start helping each other, you know, go through this, what we call recovery, you know, we lend a hand, we lend an ear, we lend support. It's pretty amazing, you know, what can come out of it. And then my work therapy, you know, I'm one of my first jobs here, and I was working in the kitchen, and it's a hotbed of activity. You know, it's a place where we serve, you know, 900 meals in a 600 meal kitchen, and it can get a little hot, you know, and it's long hours, but you know, it's what you needed to do. You know, if you wanted to go through and become a better person, you know, clean and sober, that's what you needed to do. But then I had the opportunity to, you know, move into a different job. And, you know, it was what we call GIK, Gifts in Kind, where all our donations come in. And I started working there. And that's when I really started learning about people giving from the heart, you know, just giving. You know, people just drop stuff off, clothing, toiletries, you know, and not want a receipt, not to be known who they were. You know, they just wanted to drop stuff off and just give, you know, anonymously. And I couldn't understand that at first, because anytime I gave something, I always expected something in return. You know, there's always ulterior motives. But these people didn't want that, you know. They were just giving. And it started, you know, it started really piquing an interest and then started picking at my heart. You know, the reason these people did this was to help people like us, you know, people who are broken, who are hurt and need help. And they just freely give. And it's amazing. And that's what this whole program is people supporting these men. We couldn't be here without people giving money and clothing and toiletries. We wouldn't exist. But people do, because they believe. They believe, you know, that good's going to come out of this. And a lot of good does come out of this program. And like I said, you know, I had the opportunity to change job positions, I guess, again, and start working up here. And it's something, I guess, that I've never done before, but was similar to what I've done in other jobs. And it was like customer service, meeting people, you know, where I got to a position where, you know, I was I was working and being responsible. And I guess they saw that. So when there was an opportunity that a position did open, they asked me to apply like anyone else would do. They just don't freely give these jobs out because there is a limited number of jobs. But they did let me apply. They reviewed my application just like they would anyone else. And then they asked me, you know, if I had the heart to serve, would I? And I, of course, I said I would. I mean, who else wouldn't work for a program or a place that ended up saving your life? And that's exactly what this place did, was save my life. It took me in. It changed me. It got me closer to God. It, you know, and now I have the opportunity to give back and to be giving freely. And I don't expect things in return. You know, I feel, you know, much better about myself. And I'm, you know, I just hope, like I said, anything that I can do can help someone be clean or sober, just maybe just another day, you know, another week, another hour. You know, that, you know, we're all here, you know, we're in recovery. You know, some people like to say that, you know, I'm recovered. I believe my disease is that I'm never going to recover. I'm always in recovery. I mean, it's only going to take one drink or one drug for me to relapse. But relapse also starts before that. But, you know, it is. It's kind of like, I guess it's in submission or remission, I'm sorry, where, you know, by taking a drink or a drug that, you know, you're going to start this sickness, this illness all over again. And it's a progressive disease. Every time, it seems that you get deeper and deeper, and your bottom gets lower and lower. And so to a certain point, you know, when's it going to end? And I just hope it's ended when I got here. And I look forward to each and every day. You know, I'm glad to wake up, and I look forward to serving one another. I'll get to serving the Lord, and it's just every day is brighter. You know, it's amazing. It really, truly is.
And amen to that. And I do have one question, though.
Sure.
You know, I've heard the term before, but could you elaborate on the being a dry drunk?
Yeah, a dry drunk is someone who makes a conscious decision not to drink alcohol, I guess. You know, no more beers, you know, for whatever reason. You know, I'm getting tired of waking up, you know, feeling ill, you know, feeling sick, hungover. I can't do anything productive if I'm drinking. But that's all you do. You just quit drinking. You don't change your behavior. You don't change your thought patterns.
Mm-hmm.
We're still, you know, doing a lot of the same things. I would still hang out at the bar with a friend or shoot pool. You know, I would still not be going home like I would want to, or should have, I should say. I would still, do some of the things that I might have done while I was drinking. None of them particularly bad, but I just didn't change the people and places and things in my life. And I didn't change myself, in a sense, I guess. I did find another addiction, a healthy addiction, but I never concentrated on staying clean and sober. And, you know, so I never understood what taking another drink would do to me. And after 4.5 years, I found out. I found exactly what taking another drink after all that time would do. And it took me right back to where I was, and even further. And it took me even to a lower place that next time. And because of where I was the last time, you know, that, I guess, helps me think before, you know, before I decide to take another drink. And it's going to be worse. and could I handle it being worse than what it was? And I tell myself, probably not. So I have to weigh, you know, my circumstances, to live life like it is or to live life like it was and even worse. I think I'll choose today.
That's great. And again, you know, for all of our listeners, you know, here's someone who had a great job making, you know, for this day and age, great money. And once again, as I believe I said this last time that you all were on, so many people just think, oh, they're homeless bums, they were never anybody, they'll never amount to anything. But the realization is, you know, once again, people, but for the grace of God, it could be any of us. No one knows what each of us is going through. Each one of us has our own demons. So at night, I believe that we could get down on our knees and thank God that we have not fallen to any type of temptation that led us down this type of a road. But, you know, and for those of you who are in the call query and, of course, in the chat room, thank you so much. Special welcome to Beth and guest 5100 and guest 5262 in the chat room. Thank you for joining us there. And thank you for joining us to all of our guests here on the call query. Thank you all so much for joining me here this evening on Healing Through Hurt Talk Radio. We're here with the men of the Helping Up Mission in Baltimore City. And they are recurring guests. We tend to return to our show. I try to have them on at least once a month or maybe every other month as time permits for them when they're available. And each time you're going to hear from different participants in the program there, and you will see that these are real people. These are people, I believe, last time they were on the show, we had people that were college educated and had great executive jobs and things like that. And for whatever reason, things happened to them and they ended up at the mission, which, you know, after, of course, they tried to fix things on their own and they stumbled and fell a few times, they eventually ended up at the place where divine timing intended for them to be. So with that said, Barry, thank you so much for sharing your story. And, of course, tonight, ladies and gentlemen, if we do not get to all of the gentlemen, I will work it out with Barry, but I did leave open next week for us to have a continuous show. If we cannot get to all of the gentlemen tonight, because, once again, we're down to about an hour and 7 minutes, so in the event that we do not get to everyone's story, we will have them back, if possible, next Saturday night to allow all of the gentlemen to share in their experiences. So, again, Barry, thank you so much for letting us into your world and getting a look into that. And, you know, I just, when you said that, you know, you were a federal employee and you had great jobs and you had, you know, jobs that people are dying to get nowadays and all of that, just was gone. And, you know, what this mission is doing is a great thing to help those who have humbled themselves enough or something has, they've gotten to that point where that one particular incident has happened that has pushed them to find the help that they need. So thank you again. And we have one more gentleman here. We'll be talking in a few moments, Mark Sikorsky, but that was we've just been listening to Barry Burnett, and he is a wonderful gentleman. And if any of you at any time would like to visit the facility, I'm sure, Barry, before you go, you can give us all of the contact information so that people can contact you even if they want to give donations. And, of course, you can always send donations if you want us to drop them off for you. If you want to send toiletries and clothing and things, we would be more than happy to take it to the mission as well, because we do intend on making our presence there known in person as well as here on Healing Through Earth Talk Radio.
Okay, Maria. We're going to make a change up here quick. We're going to have Robert Provenzano before
okay.
Mark Sicchetti. And we have Robert here now.
Okay, great. But Barry, before you go, Barry?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, give me the contact information before you go. That way we can keep the show rolling for the gentleman.
Certainly. I'm more than happy. We have a website, www.helpingupmission.org. You can check us out there. You can call me at 410-675-7500. I'm extension 147. Or we're also on Facebook, Helping Up Mission. And we also have a number you can call. It's 410-675-HELP. It also you'll be able to reach us here. We have several ways: Facebook, Helping Up Mission, helpingupmission.org, and 410-675-7500, or 410-675-HELP. And thank you.
Thank you. And we're about to talk to Robert now. Robert's coming up next. And Robert, just let me know when you're there.
I'm ready, ma'am. How are you?
Hey, how are you? I'm good. Welcome to Healing Through Hurt this evening. And I guess everyone's cued you in on how we do things here. So right about now, the mic belongs to you so that you can share with us your story. And we are all ears right now. So with that said, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be talking to Robert Provenzano. Did I say that correctly? I hope so.
Yes, ma'am.
Great. So tell us a little bit about your story.
Well, like Barry, I came from Baltimore County, in almost like identical situation. And I found alcohol at an early age also. And in the area that I grew up, there was also drugs. And so by the time I was a teenager, I just liked the way it changed the way I felt. And I think in my situation, I wanted to fit in with all the kids that I went to new school with. And I just tended to gravitate, even though I was an athlete, I just tended to gravitate to the people that used. I thought they were cooler, and it was the thing to do. But I liked the way how alcohol changed the way I felt, and all the girls drank, and I just thought that was. But I didn't realize that I depended on that feeling for social situations. That when I became older, I always relied on that. And then I grew up in the 80s where, I don't know if a lot of people can relate to discos and all the, it was Quaaludes and there was all the drinking and there was cocaine. But by the time I reached 26, I realized that this was no longer working for me and I wanted to grow up and become a man. And I went to trade school and a college and I became a master plumber and then a steam fitter. And then I went to college for HVAC, and then I got married. So I went to Narcotics Anonymous all them years, and then I found church. But I got married and had two children, and then when my marriage fell apart, the ex-wife left and the children left, I found a hole. We were going to marriage counseling, and it was an emptiness in my house after I come home, and I went to church. I was like a workaholic. I tried to replace one drug for another. And eventually I went to therapy and they said, I think you need to go to see a psychiatrist. And I didn't realize it, but in this, in Narcotics Anonymous, they said, who's an addict? They said, they said that we tried religion, psychiatry, and even be institutionalized. And we found all these ways, but none of it seemed to help until we come to the realization that we needed, the 12 steps. And then I didn't realize it, but through working the steps, like the step 12 was like having had a spiritual awakening as a result of all these steps, we carried the message to other addicts who suffer. So, well, I didn't realize that I began to suffer through, I liked being in love, I loved being married, I loved my wife and my children. Once they were gone, I had this vast hole, and then I didn't know that the mental illness, I didn't know I had a mental illness, I was just suffering from lack of love that I knew. And then I eventually just started using, because the church or in the program just lost my way. I think there's so many of us do. And then drinking led to cocaine, and then but I had an intervention at work. I went to I worked at Bethlehem Steel at the time. They had went out of business, but the United Steelworkers and another company, ISG, had taken over. And they sent me to a rehab, and I did a 2-week thing, and I got back, I got involved in EAP, and I got re-involved until I got hurt in an accident. That lasted for about 2 years, and I got hurt in an accident at work, and I had to get my hip replaced. And you know, anytime we introduce a chemical like a Percocet or oxycodone, I never really taken that kind of drug before, but I got addicted to it, just like any other thing that, that led to another relapse, and I got back to work for a short time, but they just put me off, and I never really made it back, which, like Barry said, I went through my 401k, my savings, I sold my house, and to make a long story short, I mean, I used all that time, and I don't want to tell people how to use, because we all know, I think anybody that took drugs knows how to use them, but the end feeling was that I kept thinking for like 3 years that if I could just stop using, I could see my children again. My ex-wife would let me see them, and she wouldn't let me see the children in that kind of condition for their safety. And I tried to find love through some form, but, you know, if you can't love yourself, you know, I don't know how you can love somebody else. And
exactly.
So I achieved the objective. I became numb. I mean, whatever they call it, comfortably numb, or whatever the song says, Pink Floyd, I became numb. I was unable to cry, feel, and I used whatever I could. You know, mainly cocaine and heroin. So I never really thought I'd be addicted to heroin, but I became addicted to heroin. And I heard about this place when I got evicted. My money had run, my 401k ran out, and was unable to pay rent, and I wasn't really able to hustle anymore. And started living from a room to a room instead of living in an apartment, and then eventually lost most of my furniture. And I heard about this place over a month ago, a month before I was ready to come here. And the word mission kind of scared me, and it was kind of like the way Barry described it. I just thought I'd be sleeping on a cot on a floor or something, and I didn't realize that this facility was what it was. And I would have come here much, much, much earlier. So the word mission scared me, but maybe I was just scared in general. So until I actually was so hungry and I wasn't eating, and if I had $10 or $20, I didn't even buy cigarettes or food. I just bought my drugs, and I just couldn't see myself living like that anymore. And I called a family member, my aunt, and asked her, just please put me somewhere. I'm ready. You know, my whole family, I have a big family, but, you know, they're smart enough not to enable me, and they left me out there on my own. And I'm gaining their support now. I've been here, today's my 60th day clean, and I think that's one of the reasons they wanted me to come over. So far, like Barry described, I went through the Seed of Hope phase, and I'm now in Omega. And like I said, I haven't used the psychiatry medicine, even though that's available. I know I suffer from being bipolar, and what we like to do is self-medicate ourselves, and if we're feeling bad, we want to feel better, so we want to find that instant fix out of that depression, and so we, you know, like I said, I've tried psychiatry, religion, and 12 steps, and I just wanted the quick fix, so I know it's a lot of hard work. I know I have to detox, and then I have to get that out of my system. I know there's going to be a physical and a mental, and I was already spiritually hurting all three areas, and I didn't know how this place is so well equipped for a person like myself that has lost all his physical possessions in life, and monetary. I thought, how do I pay for a place to get better? I didn't know they were set up for a person like myself that was bankrupt in every area, but I'm a good person, that I worked hard all my life, that I wanted to be a father and a husband, but life just didn't work out anyway. So I don't want to take up a lot of the time telling you about all that, but I want to say that the staff here, and like Barry said, how we just get clothes and we have enough, and I just walked in here with one outfit, and like today I have a locker full of clothes, and I'm looking forward to the stages where I might not be able to do the steam fitting and that kind of work anymore, but they have training for I'm able to go back to college if I want, and when I get to that phase, and Barry said, the graduation part. Was the first day I was able to cry in a couple years. And once the men sang in the choir and I saw all these guys that had graduated, it gave me hope that I know. It sounded like a long time, a year. But so people were saying that it goes fast. And after my first couple weeks, it's already been 2 months, and I can already see how 2 months can turn into a year. So by the hard work of others ahead of me, and like I said, that graduation, I cried, and so far the good news is I have gotten letters from my one letter from each child, and my family members are supporting me, and now I'm able to leave the mission, and there's like a family party next week that I'm invited to, that I haven't seen people for years, so I didn't know that I had the love and support of all my family. But they just didn't enable me because of my lifestyle choices. And they were all hoping this day would come before I died, for real. So that's about all I have, man.
Oh, wow. And I just want to tell you that I'm praying for you to continue on your road to success. And isn't it amazing what, you making those first few steps, putting one foot in front of the other, how, you know, it has brought your family back. And once again, you're another example that you had a wonderful job, 401K, and all of these things, and you lost all of that. And so many times people don't understand that it can happen to any one of us if we fall. You know, we become weak and we give in to our depressions. And in your case, you had everything from peer pressure to, you know, getting hooked on prescription medications, and you liked the temporary fix, you know, alcohol and the drugs or whatever. That's just that temporary fix that makes you feel good for that particular moment in time. And then usually when you come back down, the same problems are still there. Now you've added more to it because you spent all the money that you could have had to move forward on your alcohol and or drugs. So that just compounds the problem. But, once again, you are a wonderful example of what can happen. And for all of our guests listening, if you have any questions or comments, you can either call in 646-478-4726. and press the number one on your phone to let me know that you'd like to be on air, or feel free to type your question or comment in the chat room, and I would be more than happy to read it for you on air. A special welcome to my guest, Straight Truth, CC. Thank you so much for supporting me here this evening on Healing Through Hurt, and to all of our guests in the chat room. Thank you so much for joining us here this evening. And, Robert, I want to thank you again for sharing your story, because, you know, you are that beacon of light that will help someone when they come across this show. And I pray you much success. And thank you so much for sharing this evening.
You're welcome. Thank you very much. I hope I can help.
I'm sure you will. And, wow, this has been a show. Once again, people, we're down to about 49 minutes. But I do, if Mark is ready, I do want to get Mark in, because he was one of our original guests on the debut show that we did a few weeks ago. And if he's ready, I'd like to speak with Mark. And as I said, if we don't get to everyone tonight, we will be coming back next week to bring back the gentlemen to finish their stories. And if it's just one or two gentlemen, we may not have a two-hour show next week. We may have a one-hour show, but we will be able to get to all of the gentlemen and their stories.
Good evening. My name's Mark.
Hey, Mark, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm great, and I'm so sorry that we ran out of time on you last time, but as promised, I definitely wanted to have you back here on this particular episode of our show. And I guess we're going to jump right in and let you share your story and how you came to be at the mission, and what your future goals are for yourself.
Okay. Let's see, where to begin? Have to go back quite a ways, back to the wonderful year of 1965. I was about 4 years old, and apparently at that point in American culture, it was hilarious to see a four-year-old drunk. So I was given my first beer.
Oh, wow.
And, I was four. It was just one of the things my family did. It was accepted, just like rubbing whiskey on a teething baby's gums. I know it sounds very, very sick by today's standards, but nobody knew any better. They really didn't. I lost my mother when I was 15. She passed away from, basically she went into the hospital for some testing, and she had a stroke that was brought on by the delirium tremens. She was a very, very heavy drinker. From that point, I lived with my one sister, who was 13 years older than me. I did graduate high school back then. Started smoking a lot of marijuana, drinking quite a bit. I had always worked. I started delivering newspapers when I was 12, so that I could buy things for myself, clothing, school supplies. I bought my own bike. I bought a TV. And this was all back in the early 70s. And I had always had a job all through high school. I think I made the right decisions when I was in high school. I went to a vocational technical school and took a three-year data processing course in Baltimore County. That launched my career as a senior software engineer. I was in the field for 22 years overall. Started as a computer operator, and that pretty much ended right after 9/11 happened. The bottom of the financial markets just fell out. But in the meantime, I got married when I was 22. I have two sons. They are 25 and 27. I divorced my first wife in 1990 and fell into a pretty deep depression, and unfortunately discovered the virtues, at the time what I thought were virtues, of crack cocaine. Smoked a lot of that. Couldn't keep a job. I was out of the computer field for a while. I attended bar for a period of time, worked a little, few construction jobs here and there, basically just throwing my life away. Had everything, the big house, the nice car, all that. It just all went away. Estranged family, estranged from my children. Got myself together a little bit in the late 90s and kind of, well, actually mid-90s, I guess 95 or so. Got back into the computer field, cleaned my act up again, bought a motorcycle, bought another house on top of the world, and then everything fell apart again. and, of course, that brought on the depression again, and, you know, of course, I saw it fit to bury that with drugs and alcohol. And it all kind of came to a head earlier this year. I went on my last, well, what I really sincerely hope and what I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that it was my last run back in January of this year. Ended up at Johns Hopkins Hospital for a few days, and I had a psychiatrist there that recommended the Helping Up mission. I asked him to describe it, and he did, said it was a one-year program, and I said, oh, my God, I can't do this for a year. And he said, well, how long have you been in your active addiction? And I thought about it. I said, about 35 years. He said, so what's another year? I said, okay. So that brought me here. Other than that, I had never heard of the place. Since I've come here, like Bob said, the first couple weeks really are the worst. And it's not so much it's bad. It's just it's a major adjustment period. You want to go out and you want to do things, and you're used to a certain lifestyle. And the best thing that you can possibly do is follow the advice of just sit still. And it's very, very difficult for most of us that have been in that lifestyle for so long. But I guess, yeah, once you clean up a little bit and you start to think a little bit more clearly, it becomes pretty easy. It really does. It's not really a difficult program. There are rules in place. Most make sense, some don't, but I guess that's just the way things are. And you either accept it or, you know, there's no locks on the door. There's guys that come in and, you know, they complain about the rules and complain about this, complain about that. And, you know, I say to them, well, you know, what's better? You know, being out on the street ripping and running and doing what you were doing, or, you know, a nice, beautiful, brand new building to live in and, decent food, education, opportunities, clothing, everything you could possibly need. So, you know, what really is your problem? And they most of them come around, you know, to the thinking a little bit, and they stick around, and they apply themselves, and they're doing well.
And, you know, once again, to all of our listeners, once again, you're somebody, you had the big house, you had the great job, you had everything, but, you know, and for those that do not know or have not realized that depression and drugs and alcohol just do not mix. And, you know, you have the drug addiction, you have the alcohol problem, and you have depression. So, you know, you're living with that infamous three strikes already in your face, because depression is a lifelong fight within, you know, itself, separate and to itself, and to add alcohol and the drugs to it, you know, it's just great to be, you know, sitting here tonight, even talking to you, and you seem to be doing well, and, you know, once again, maybe that January incident is what it took to really wake you up, so to speak, so you could have your infamous aha moment, and, you know, where do you see yourself going? I know that right now you're at that point where, you know, like you said, you know, it's 12 months. And after the 12 months, do you have your plan in place of, you know, where you're going to go when you are able to walk out that door and know that this time when you walk out, you can keep putting one foot in front of the other? Do you have something set up or a game plan in place right now for yourself?
Yeah, actually I do. The field of computer science that I was involved in was mainframe legacy systems, the COBOL language, DB2 database. I don't know if that means anything to any of the listeners out there or to you for that matter, but it's somewhat old technology that really is still out there to a large degree. The thing is, a lot of the big employers that hire for that kind of thing now are also looking for some experience with web development, client server technology, and that sort of thing. Which I guess I became complacent when I was in the computer field and just, you know, assumed that I would always have a job and I didn't really need that extra education. But now I'm seeing a resurgence of that. I've been looking at, believe it or not, Craigslist ads, quite a few. And the COBOL DB2 mainframe batch-type programming that was my specialty, accounting systems actually, is making a comeback. I'll be at a point in the program here in another maybe 4 weeks, I believe it is, but I'll be able to start going out looking for a job actively. I'm looking to get back into the field. I'm pretty sure I can handle it now. As long as I stay in this environment for a little while longer, I'll be okay. And, I mean, the money is definitely there. It's about what I was making before, which was very substantial for somebody with no college. I'm pretty sure I'll be okay. Like I said before, I'm going to do everything that I can to keep my end of the bargain up, as it were. I do a lot of praying. I pull up people when I need to. Just this evening, I'm the therapy job that I have, what they call work therapy here, I'm in maintenance. And this is my first call. It's been pretty simple. But one of the perks is that I have like a movie set up down in the shop so that I can watch movies just to keep the boredom down.
Right.
Yeah, and a buddy of mine was down with me a little while ago. We were trying to watch a movie, and it just never really got around to it. We were just shooting the breeze back and forth, talking about, you know, addiction recovery, you know, where our lives have been, where they are now, where we hope to be in the future. He's all that I've been pretty tight with since I came into the program, and it was really good to spend some decent time with him for a change. So that's my plan. And I, you know, God willing, and the creek don't rise as it goes. I'm hoping to make it happen.
Right. And there's one thing that you said, as far as COBOL, when I first had gone to college, it was COBOL and Fortran. So, yeah, I remember those days well. And, COBOL is still alive and well out there. I was shocked to notice that, I guess, maybe a year or two ago. And I'm like, wait, COBOL is still around? But,
Well, all the big systems, they still have to use COBOL just because of the sheer volume of information that they process.
Yeah.
There's always going to be a need for mainframe computer systems. I'm sorry, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. There's always going to be a necessity for mainframe computer systems, especially when you look at a company like, any of the big stock brokerage houses, T. Rowe Price, Merrill Lynch, any of them, they're always going to have a necessity for that because time process windows are very tight, typically, and that sort of thing. You know, customers want to be able to get online and see the balances of all their accounts at one time, and COBOL makes all that happen. It really does. If it weren't that, it wouldn't. You know, if the networks and the servers couldn't get the information from the mainframes, then they wouldn't be able to report it on your PC on your desk. So, you know, in the back, that's where the COBOL and the DB2 come in, because there's just nobody's built a better mousetrap yet.
And, you know, and the weird part is, for me, I'm thinking if someone just, you know, logged in or they're listening to the show from this point, they're probably thinking, well, who is this that she's talking to? And they would have no idea from our, you know, from our conversation right now that you were, you know, one of the participants in the program. And this is the point that I'm trying to make, is that so many people don't understand that, you know, the gentleman that I've talked to from the Helping Up Mission, you all are accomplished individuals, each and every one of you. And for, you know, whatever your circumstance, you ended up there, which, you know, it's a blessing that that is where you need to be. And, you know, I guess in a few months, as time goes on, I'm going to say, you know what, how's Mark doing now? Because one thing that stuck out in your comment was you said you're pretty sure you'll be okay. So I know by the end of the program at graduation time, you'll be able to say, I'm going to be okay. Because one thing that I've learned in dealing with healing through my hurts is that there are days when if I say, yeah, I think I might be, then that leaves that door open for that negativity or whatever drama may be coming my way. So in the morning, I look in the mirror and my mantra is, I'm going to be. So, you know, when you're ready to graduate, I'm sure that I'll still be somewhere in the shadows. You know, Maria will still be hanging around. So I'll be wondering how you're doing. And, you know, hopefully maybe one day when you all are getting to that point, I would love to come down and see when you all have your ceremony and maybe even say a few words of encouragement to wish you well when you're coming back out into this cruel, cruel world, because I'll tell you, you know, times don't change, people do. And right about now, you know, when you come out, it's a lot of, you know, negativity out here in the world now. So I know that the mission will be preparing you for that. And as always, you know, I pray you the strength and courage to be able to handle that when your time to graduate and come back out into this world is at hand. Because I tell you, it's a struggle every day for me. And, you know, the world is an interesting place now. People in it are interesting. So I pray you all of the best and keep it up, because, you know, on behalf of so many of our listeners, I can tell you that I'm proud of each and every one of you. And I know who to come to when I have some computer questions and programming and things like that. Glad you told me that. I'll have to keep that in mind. And you never know who's going to hear the show. So, you know, we do have scouts that listen and people like that. So you never know who may be watching the progress in the background. And sometimes I hear about it. Sometimes I don't until after things, you know, pop off or individuals. But you never know. So I do. I pray you much success in all of your goals. And you never know. Our paths may cross in the business world someday. And I'll say, you know what, I knew you back when. So.
Right. How about
thank
that?
You so much for joining
thank
me
you.
Here this evening and sharing. Okay. We are moving right along. Who's up next, Barry?
Hi, Maria. We have Timothy Brown. He's next. And he's eagerly waiting to speak on his behalf.
Oh, Timothy is here. Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. At this point, Timothy will probably be ending this segment because we have about 32 minutes left. If you gentlemen would like to come back next week and finish your stories, that would be great. We're going to hear Timothy tonight. And I do have next week open for you all so that we can have part three of the program, part two for this segment, in the event that we don't get to everyone tonight, which I'm almost sure that we will not be able to with 31 minutes left. So, Barry, if you'd like to set that up for next week as well, we could get to the other, because there's like one, two, three, four, about five other gentlemen. So we have a full show again. So you just let me know if you all want to do that, but we're ready for Timothy. And
how you doing, Maria?
Hey, how are you?
Good. How are you this evening?
I am tired but blessed. You know, have my ups and downs too, but I'm here, and I'm enjoying listening to you and your colleagues there. So, you know, enlighten us. Tell us your story.
Well, I mean, me, I'm kind of a different sort. Not that we're all the same, so a little difference. And I mean, I came from a very, very loving family. I have great family now, very good support, friends that I have kept are true friends to me. I'll be 30 this year, so I've been drinking a lot of alcohol. Even when I really didn't start drinking until a late age, 18, 19. And when I was 19, I joined the Army. It was a couple of years before 9/11 had occurred.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I had my identity. I had my, you know, my uniform. That's who I was. I was very good at it. In July of 2001, I was out with some friends, and I was not able to drink, but we were out one evening, and we were in town, down in Kansas, and kind of hard, but we were out one night, and we ended up getting in a fight, and my best friend, who was my squad mate, my brother, my roommate, he got killed that evening.
Mm.
And I kind of, you know, I lost a piece of me that night.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, I lost my, you know, my position in the service. I was discharged. And from that, I kind of felt like I kind of got cheated, because I didn't get to finish what I wanted to be.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, I turned to the next thing that I thought I was good at, which was sales in the auto industry. You know, my father had done it for years, and I'm good with people, and it's in the blood. And you know, the very first month, it was a success for me. But I found myself working 70, 75 hours a week, and that job, there's no slacking on the partying. We certainly work hard, and you know, we run hard.
Right.
So it wasn't every night, you know. As soon as you get off, you are out there, you know, till 2 a.m. Get up at 7. Get ready for work. 9 o'clock, you're at work, and you run till 9 o'clock working, and then run till 2. And that's kind of how it was. It was monogamous like that for years. Until, you know, I got my first DUI. And then, you know, I kind of went into the courtroom and, you know, I played, you know, played the part that I, you know, that I could. And I got a, you know, pretty light sentence, a little slap on the wrist, and continued running. Second DUI came in 07. And still, even at that point, I was still working hard, still making good money. You know, went in, I did a 30-day inpatient program at, you know, one of the nicest ones around here in Maryland, at Father Martin's Ashley. And that, for me, was not enough. I wouldn't admit it, because by trying to give someone 30 days of this is how it should be, this is how it's going to be, this is how you need to do it, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, for $2,000 or $30,000 and kick you out the door and say, go do it. Not that I'm doubting their ways. I'm sure there are successes, but that just, you know, it wasn't enough for me. And I didn't go back to the auto. I didn't go back to sales. After that, I went and I worked at, you know, 2 Fortune 500 companies, doing, you know, just customer service,
mm-hmm.
sales up kind of thing. And you know, I was just making basic, you know, not a ton of money, but you know, for the anguish or, you know, customer, you know, mentality is, you know, you hear a lot and you don't make it enough. And I had gone to one of my employers and said, you know, I'm having a drinking problem, and you know, they wanted me to go to these outpatient programs. And and, you know, my insurance that I had, it wouldn't cover it. So for, you know, 6 months, I'm going to an outpatient program that I'm paying my money for something that I went to the employer and said I had a problem with. And it'd be nothing for me to go to that hour session
mm-hmm.
right after that, leave that door and go to the bar. But they kind of, you know, I was still making my quota and, you know, still gaining them, you know, money. So, you know, it didn't go as, you know, the way I wanted it. But, you know, in September of last year, I think, you know, the fuse was lit, so to speak. And, you know, I went into work one day and I said, you know what, I'm done. I can't do this job anymore. It's just not cutting it. I'm making less, but hearing more, you know, aggression from customers. And, you know, I went back to selling in the auto industry. And my first month after 3 years, you know, I made $9,000 and, you know, I was, you know, happy as a cue ball. But the very next month, I hit that third DUI. And for me, that kind of catapulted everything because my depression had sank to an ultimate low. Because I was looking at work as being my gateway. I was still getting up. I was still at work every day. I was still successful. I was still making money. I was happy. In my mind, art has always been missing something. You know, I'm not married. I have no kids. So it's even though I have family and I have a nephew and a niece, you know, who, you know, I love greatly, I didn't have anything of my own except for my work. I didn't ever looked at that as being, you know, a bad thing because, you know, I'm doing it every day. So, you know, you can count on me to show up. They knew that. But, you know, I went to, after I was arrested, and, you know, I had a, you know, a bail review. And at that point, I kind of had kind of a light show off because I could have made bail in an hour. And instead, I chose not to. I lost my job, and that's primarily because my license was gone. And I didn't have my car or anything at that point. So I just kind of stayed. I just stayed. And I didn't, knowing that, had I left, I probably would not be here. I probably would have just drank myself to a coma. But I stayed nonetheless. And while I was sitting incarcerated, you know, someone had mentioned, from the family had mentioned the Helping Up mission. And I had no intentions of staying for, you know, a year or, you know, 6 days. I was looking for another way out. And then I kind of said, well, we have everything paid up to what we need. There's no, there's nothing hanging over my head right now. I can just take time for me. And I can do some searching in my head. And I came here directly from court. And today is actually 4 months at the mission.
Oh, wow.
And a great 4 months, actually. There's a lot of things I'm doing. I'll soon, you know, soon work will be kind of looking for work. I do have, you know, some contacts I've met for possible employment. Maybe try something new, maybe in the mortgage field or something. One of my true friends, my best friend, him, and I didn't tell him when I was incarcerated, and he was, you know, he thought something really bad happened to me. Because I hadn't contacted him for 2 months, but, you know, he's aware of, you know, everything that's happened, and, you know, him and his wife, and he's got two little boys, you know, I love them as family, him, her, and the boys, and, you know, he's doing really well, and, you know, might be something for me to consider, that I might like to, you know, something new. And, you know, what a better teacher than, you know, someone that has the experience.
Right.
But, you know, kind of where I'm at right now, and, you know, I'm just going to keep going. You know, one day I'm not projecting my mind. The way that I'm built is, you know, I always think 6 months ahead, a year ahead. Where am I going to be, what am I supposed to have? I should have this, this, and this. Well, it's kind of nice not thinking about what's going to be there next month, next year. I'll get there when I get there.
Right.
Oh, well.
It's good that you understand that you'll get there when you get there, and you're going into everything with your eyes wide open and not wide shut, because so many people like to try to take on things that is way out of their, you know, realm and ability to even tackle or handle. And you seem to already know that, you know what, this is what it is, and right now I can't deal with that because it's something that I can't change or fix right now until I'm done fixing me. And, you know, you seem to really have it, you know, that mindset where I believe that you need to be and where the mission probably wants most of their participants to be, because, you know, we spend too much time downing ourselves on things that are totally out of our control instead of us dealing with the here and now. And right now, the here and now is healing you and working on you. So, you know, it's good to know that you already know that. And, you know, it seems like I don't have to sit up here and tell you much of anything, because you know what? I know that this is going to be a struggle. I know what I have to do. And you're that type that's just a go-getter, and you're going to, you know, you speak with such determination.
My mom always said, it is what it is. Face it now. It'll happen when it'll happen. It'll be ready when it's ready, but it is what it is. And I never was never that person. It is what it is. I would try and manipulate it or, you know, find a way around it. I said, it is what it is. I'll make it my way, but now I've realized it's not my way, and it is what it is. But, you know, that sometimes is a good thing. It's not always a bad thing.
Right, exactly. Exactly. And, I want to thank you so much for sharing your story, because, you know, tonight for me has been so wonderful, because, once again, hearing each one of your different stories from different angles and different perspectives, you know, our listeners got a chance to hear so many different scenarios and so many different ways that you all ended up at the same place. But, you know, you came from different backgrounds, different means. You know, your family was wonderful. And, you know, you got out there and, of course, you shed a light on something else, you know. Work environment, going out to the infamous happy hours and, you know, celebratory functions all the time, and liquor and other things always present and always working. You know, you shed a light on something totally different that even I hadn't given much thought to, but I said, you know what, he's right. You know, all of that can help to contribute towards the bigger picture as well. So, wow, thanks for sharing that. And once again, to all of our listeners, you know, this has been an enlightening show for me, so I can tell you that I'm pretty sure that it's been that way for all of our listeners as well. But, you know, and that's something for our listeners to think about next time you decide to go to happy hour and think, because most people equate happy hour to drinking. You know, I don't know why people think that they can't go to happy hour to unwind from work or to celebrate without having liquor involved. And, you know, sometimes this is what happens when you add some other issues that are at play. Maybe some people don't even know that they're suffering from depression or, you know, or in some cases bipolarism or whatever it is. Some people don't even know that they already have an underlying condition, and add, you know, the demon seed of alcohol and other vices, and, you know, that sends us in the wrong direction. So thanks for sharing that, because you really did put a new spin on things. And
it's very easy to get lost in that. You can really hide. You know, some people it's good to, you know, to bring that up, because even though you work with that individual and they do good at work, it's very easy for them to go out and drink and be someone else. But when they leave and you leave and they're by themselves, it's a different ball game.
Right. right, and that's absolutely true. And wow, thanks for bringing that up, because that's, again, you know, I love this show, and not just because it's my show, but I love this show because I meet people such as yourself, and you guys can really open up even my eyes to things that I hadn't even given any thought to. But so true, so true. And thank you so much for joining us here, or joining me, rather.
Having me, Maria.
And all of the guests. And I will be, of course, talking to Barry and checking on everyone. And, of course, my women's organization, the Wild Women, will be coming down there to visit you all in the near future. So, you know, I'd love to sit down with all of the guests for the show especially and meet you all firsthand, face-to-face. So thanks again for sharing your story.
Oh, you're welcome. Hi, Maria. It's Barry.
I was like, wait a minute. Did everybody leave me? But, you know, I like I said, Barry, and for all of our listeners, because we are running out of time for this week's show, if the gentlemen want to do a show next week, I have left that slot open for you all in the event that we did not get to everyone. And like I said, there's like five or six people left. So if you want to do that, then you can let me know ASAP, and I will, of course, let all of the listeners know that you'll be here again next week. So
yeah, I will let you know. I know, was it next weekend, Memorial Day weekend? And we'll have to
see. Oh, yeah. That's
so
right, it is.
Who's around? And if no one's around, we will have the Seeds of Hope around still, because they'll be ones on restriction. But a number of the guys really don't go anywhere for the weekend. Like I said, they're staying here, you know, just trying to get their life back together. And so they can, you know, get those relationships all started and kicked off again. But no, we always enjoy the opportunity to be on your show. We hope we enlighten the listeners on, you know, on at least one thing in their life that they might not have realized. You know, we do have our problems. Life, you know, life is life. Life has its problems. You know, and as bad as things can get, we also realize, you know, when we start doing the right thing, and that you know, working towards a better goal, that life can turn around. And I know for me it has. I mean, you know, I have a job. I'm not going to become a millionaire, but I have a job. I'm comfortable. I have wonderful, loving people around me. I have a wonderful woman in my life. And, you know, I'm happy. And I think that's all we really want, you know, is just to be happy, just to be loved, and just live life to its fullest.
And that is it. And, you know, there's so many people out here, and you want to know where all the good men are right now. They're healing themselves. So, you know, for some of you ladies who think that all the good men are gone, you know, it depends on what your perception of a good man is, because, you know, these gentlemen want to get well, they want to get better. They want to be husbands and boyfriends and supporters and the come to people, you know, where people can come to them for encouragement and enlightenment and things. And that's something to be said and to be commended. So once again, I enjoy when you guys come on, because it gives us a chance to look into the world and see hurt and healing from a male perspective, which so many times people don't even think about that. So, you know, for me, I love it, and thank you so much for, of course, coming back to Healing Through Hurt. It's always a pleasure to have you guys. And if not next week, because it is the holiday weekend, we can do it on June the 11th, I believe. Yeah, the 11th, that way, because a lot of our listeners may be out of town next week. So if you want to. We can set it up and do it on June the 11th. That way, you know, the gentlemen can get their scheduling together and prepare to be on for June the 11th. I believe that's a Saturday. I don't have my calendar, but I'm almost sure it is.
I do have one in front of me, too. Yes. That would be...
Well, we'll be June the 11th, then. We'll have you guys back on June the 11th, same time. And we can finish up, and we'll have some more of the men come on that we did not have tonight. And you can just give me an updated list and let me know if it's the list that I already have or some more. And once again, you can give all of your contact information again before we go so that everyone will know how to reach you.
Okay. Again, we are the Helping Up Mission. We are located at 1029 East Baltimore Street, Baltimore, Maryland, 21202. It's kind of like a gem in the middle of the city that not many people realize. We can also be reached on a website at www.helpingupmission.org. We do have a place on Facebook, the Helping Up Mission, and we do have a couple of phone numbers you can also reach us. It's 410-675-7500 or 410-675-HELP. HELP is 4357. And if there's any questions or concerns, you can reach me at 410-675-7500 extension 147. That's direct line to mine. I'm there mostly Monday through Friday, 9 to 5. And anybody has questions or concerns, feel free to give me a call.
And once again, ladies and gentlemen, as always, we have been here with the men of the Helping Up Mission. And, of course, that was just Barry Burnett speaking. He is my point of contact there, and he is also one of the graduates of the program at the Mission who has decided to stay on board as a staff member to help be that beacon of light for so many other men that are coming along down that road that he has already crossed. And, of course, for those of you, when you listen to the archive show, or for those of you who have listened to the full show tonight, once again, all of these men ended up at the same place, but their circumstances and their levels and things like that were different remarkably, but they all ended up in the same place. So, again, you just never, ever know when something, life may throw you that devastating curveball, and now you know. So many of them had to go through several different experiences before they ended up at the Mission. But right now, in the event that you find yourself sinking fast to that level, you know now that the Helping Up Mission is there to help you. So you don't have to keep beating yourself up and waiting for the next incident to come along to knock you down again. You already know where the numbers are and where the place is located that you will probably need to be. So, Barry, with that said, I want to thank you and all the gentlemen this evening for joining me. And, of course, I pray each and every one of you all enough of whatever it is that you need to make it through your programs and your trials and whatever you're going through. I pray each and every one of you enough of whatever it is that you need to make it through and to reach your goals. So we will see you all back here again on June the 11th at our regular time, 9 p.m. And I'm so looking forward to bringing the ladies down to get that grand tour and to do our volunteer work. So again, people, it's always good to pay it forward. Just remember that. So again, I want to thank everyone for joining us here this evening on Healing Through Hurt Talk Radio, especially all of the gentlemen of the Helping Up Mission who, as you all know, are regular guests here on Healing Through Hurt Talk Radio. And we will see them back here again on June 11th. And with that said, we're going about to end the show. And I want to thank each and every one of you, all of our guests in the call queue, and in the chat room for joining us here this evening. And I pray all of you and us as well. So, Barry, thank you again, and I will be in touch. And we will see you all back here on June the 11th.
Thank you, Maria. And we look forward to you and your women coming down to visit the mission. And we look forward to June 11th and being there on radio show with you. Thank you.
Thank
God bless you
so much. Thank
God bless
you
all
as well. Thank you. You have a great evening.
Thank you. You as well.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night. But thank you all for joining us here on Healing Be Heard Talk Radio this evening. Once again, I am your host, Maria Wall, and we will not be here next week. We will be coming back on June 4th, where my special guest will be Chitaka Webb. And, of course, we'll be here tomorrow for our Sunday morning meditation. So feel free to join us here for our 15 minutes of stress relief and release. And until then, you all be blessed. I pray you enough sunshine to brighten your rainy days, enough smiles to turn that frown upside down, and enough strength and courage to be able to face whatever may be coming your way this week. And I want to thank each and every one of you for joining us here toward the Men of Helping Up Mission in Baltimore, Maryland. They are regular guests here on the show, and they will be back again, as I said, on June the 11th. So until then, you all be blessed, and we hope to see you back here soon. And as always, Healing Through Hurt Talk Radio is sponsored by the Wall Foundation, which is a faith and community-based 501c3 nonprofit. If you'd like to reach us or send a donation or words of encouragement, you can write to us at Post Office Box 272 in Randallstown, Maryland, 21133, or you can give us a call at 202-618-2556, or you can email me at mariawall@thewallfoundationinc.org. Thank you all so much for joining me here this evening, and we'll see you tomorrow morning for our Sunday morning meditation. And until then, you be blessed, and I can't thank you all enough for all of your love and support, because each day you help me to heal through my hurt as well. So I see that one of my wonderful, wonderful co-hosts on the Beautiful Butterfly Show has shown up in the chat room. Thanks for joining me tonight, lady. And if you're having a show tonight, I'll see you there, because I'm her unofficial, unpaid, and unappreciated bouncer on her show. So I will be joining her in a little while. So I will see you all a little bit later in a few hours for a fun morning meditation. Thank you so much. Have a great, great weekend. And we will be back in 2 weeks with my special guest of the web. Till then, take care and enjoy the rest of your weekend.